This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Hey guys, welcome back to episode, I believe, number 7 of the Mother Freaking Real Life podcast. Today is special and different for me because for the first time ever, I have someone here that is not just one of my best friends. It's someone I actually just met for the first time today. And she is here to talk about quite a few things. It's funny because I had planned with you to start doing shorter episodes because I think I told you in the car earlier, I keep getting feedback that your episodes are too long. Like no one has time to finish them. But of all people to do a shorter episode with, I feel like you're not the one because you have so many different things I want to talk about. But her name is Tiffany Massa. Mm-hmm. Say hello, Tiffany.
Hello.
Tiffany is going to talk about several things today. She's here. So basically you've listened to most of my episodes so far. And I think in one of them a few weeks ago, I had mentioned kind of my criteria for how I go about deciding people to have on the show. And I had said either they need to have gone through some kind of tragedy and now they're either on the other side of that tragedy and have all this wisdom to share, or maybe they're still in the midst of the tragedy, but they still have kind of some insight to share. So that was kind of criteria number one. Criteria number two was that they're just doing something really awesome, something that changes people's lives or something that's just kind of just something cool and different than what most people are doing. Or my third category I said is just that for whatever reason, they're just really fun and funny and cool to talk to. And maybe we'll have to like come up with a topic. But you listened to that and you reached out to me, which I feel like is an honor that you even wanted to be on my podcast because you're like kind of a big deal, which we'll get to why later. But you reached out to me and said that you would listen to that. And you said, I'm not really sure if I fit into the third category of being like fun and funny to talk to.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. But you said, I definitely fit in, you felt like you fit into the first two categories because of A, kind of like a struggle, or I don't know if you call it a tragedy, but a struggle, a mm-hmm. hardship that you've gone through, that you have a lot of stuff to share. And then B, something really cool that you're doing. And I don't really even want to reveal yet what that is, because I think that will be at the end. And so that's why I had you on. And so we'll get into that in a minute, but I always like people to kind of get to know you first and it helps you relax a little.
Yeah.
I'm feeling a little nervous.
I am.
I am too, only because we got off to a very rough start this morning. We had a major equipment malfunction. We actually had to run to Office Depot together and buy some kind of a new cord. So we're both feeling a little frazzled, but maybe this will help you relax. Tell us a little bit about like your family situation. Who lives at your house with you? Do you have kids? Do you have a husband? Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I'm 38.
Okay.
And I married my high school sweetheart. I met Greg in 1995 when I was 14.
Okay. So that goes back even further than when I met my husband.
Yeah.
We're high school sweethearts too.
Oh, you are? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're getting to know each other today.
Yes, we are.
So we've been together a really long time. We've been married 15 years this year.
Okay.
And we have three beautiful children. My oldest is Alex. He's 12. And my other son, Drew, is 11. And they're Irish twins. So they're like 11 and a half months apart.
Okay.
So not even a year apart. And then, which is fun and hard.
And I'm sure it was crazy at first.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had a baby and then I'm like, now I'm having another baby.
Yep.
Right after that. And then my daughter, Mallory, she's 8. And we live on 6 acres out in Georgetown.
Okay.
And my husband and I work at home. I work for him. He owns a plastic recycling company. And so we don't actually recycle the plastic at my house, but we outsource that. And so I work for him part-time. And we've been doing that for about 7 years.
Okay. And you love office supplies, as I just learned.
We were
Office Depot.
Supplies.
You were like really jazzed to be in that store.
Yeah, I just wanted to like skip the podcast and shop.
And
for,
just
like,
shop.
Pins and paper.
See, that wouldn't appeal to me at all, but I'm glad that it does to you.
And I might have to go back.
When you knew exactly what aisle to go to for the cord that we needed. So that came in handy. Okay. Tell me, and I didn't prepare you for this. Is it just kind of candid and random? But again, it's just for people to get to know you. What is the best thing that's happened to you so far this week?
Oh my gosh. Well,
it could be something very little or big or anything
it's
in between.
Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a lot of patio work outside because it's spring. Mm-hmm. And for Mother's Day, we built a fairy garden outside in my backyard. Yeah. And so all week, me and the kids have been taking care of the fairies.
That's so fun.
Yeah. We thought it was supposed to rain. So we like put them in their little houses and we're preparing for the rain and planting the plants. And I don't know, it's just been so nice to be outside and be in the sunshine. So
that's a good thing. A fairy garden.
Yeah, it's so fun.
What is the worst thing that's happened to you so far this week? Was it this? Was it getting here to do this podcast and the cord breaking and having to go?
No, I guess so. Yeah, no, I haven't had any bad things happen. Just I think I've been preparing for the podcast and I've had that on my mind a lot and the subject matter. And so I've just kind of been in deep thought all week and I really have been praying that God gives me strength to say the right words and, you know, that I can really share my story in a powerful way. So
I think
not really the worst thing, but it's just what
the heaviest.
Yeah, the heaviest thing. Yeah.
Well, let's jump into that because due to my error of the cord and all of the mishaps we had so far, now we have maybe some of our guests will be or some of our listeners will be happy to know we have limited time today.
Okay,
we will
not go on.
You don't have to rush. I'm just not going
to
chit chat with you as long as I normally might, which I always think is fun, but maybe it is boring for other people to listen to. I don't know. Okay. So we're going to dive in. You have a blog post and you sent me this blog post when we were kind of talking back and forth about what you would talk about when you came on. Your blog, by the way, is called Pages and Lace, right?
Yeah.
So if anyone wanted to follow you or read this for themselves, I'm about to highlight. It's just pagesandlace.com. But this blog post, it looks like you wrote this in January of this year. Mm-hmm. And what you are kind of discussing basically is kind of what your life looked like at the beginning of this year, 2019, mm-hmm. compared to what your life was kind of starting to look like at the beginning of last year, January of 2018. And I'm not going to obviously sit here and read this whole blog post, but I do want to read the first part. It says, when I started 2018 last January, I was at one of the lowest points in my life. My anxiety was at an all-time high. I was medicating with alcohol, anxiety medication, ibuprofen, coffee, and crappy food. I was 15 pounds overweight. I was tired, foggy headed, and honestly just trying to make it through my day. This is the main sentence because this is kind of the main thing we're going to talk about a lot right now. There was no joy in my life unless I was drinking. My relationships were a mess and I was in a constant state of chaos and self-hate. So I won't keep going. I encourage you guys to read this article in its entirety because it's really good. So the sentence I wanted to highlight said, there was no joy in my life unless I was drinking. So you basically communicated to me that you had a drinking problem last year.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little about that. Would you describe yourself as a full-blown alcoholic, or were you just starting to kind of see some signs that made you feel like you were headed towards becoming an alcoholic, or how would you kind of classify what you were?
Yeah. So, you know, I've been drinking. At that point, I had been drinking for a really long time. You know, I drank in college. It wasn't a big thing back then, you know. And then I remember when I first had my boys, when they were babies, I know I was drinking. I really loved wine. I started drinking wine at 22 and knew everything about wine. Like I was the wine person.
Right.
So I know I was drinking back then, but it wasn't really a problem. I could still function and still drink, you know, and it wasn't a big deal. I didn't feel like I was using alcohol
as like a coping mechanism or a crutch. It just simply was something enjoyable.
That
like
we
every
do.
Now and then.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody drinks, you know, my family drinks and everybody drinks. But as you know, I go through, like, as I was thinking over the past decade, you know, my kids are older now. I'm like, when did this really change from, drinking socially where drinking became a problem? And I realized like over the past decade, I started drinking more and more. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the way alcohol works. You know, the more you drink, the more you drink.
Right.
So, maybe those two glasses of wine back then, I ended up needing three glasses of wine, and then I got to a bottle of wine and bottle of wine and some beer. And, you know, so you just keep drinking more and more. And I had finally got to a place I think it was like 2016. So 3 years ago now, but 2 years ago, the last 2 years of my drinking, where it just really had kind of escalated. I had started drinking up to a bottle of wine, and then I would switch to whiskey.
Okay. Like every night.
Like, so the pattern was I would drink because, you know, I come home at the end of the day and the kids are crazy and life is crazy and I want to drink. So I would start with wine at dinner. And then before I know it, you know, we're putting the kids to bed and I want to finish that bottle. And then it was like, well, I'm going to drink whiskey after that. And so I was staying up late, going to bed. The next day I would feel absolutely horrible because hangovers when you're older,
I was going to say, I mean,
are absolutely horrible. I mean, and I would feel like I was dying, you know,
and you get them and I'm not, you know, I don't, I'm not saying like, oh, you probably weren't even drinking that much. So that's not what I'm saying with this statement, but I do feel like for me, I get a hangover from drinking an amount the night before that I don't even like, it wasn't even, a, it's just like you get a hangover after like one or two drinks, or at least I do. Whereas, you know, unfortunately in college and whatnot, it took a whole lot more to get that. And I'm not saying like that you, you probably maybe were drinking too much, but
I had built up a tolerance to alcohol. So, I had such a big tolerance. That's what it was taking to get that same buzz. You know, and so my hangovers were just horrible the next day. It was so hard to function. And then I would be like, oh, I'm never drinking again, you know, and then I would go to bed. I'd wake up the next day, feel better and drink again. And so that really went on for about, I mean, that was the pattern for the past decade, but really the past two, those last 2 years, it was, I was doing that for a while.
Do you feel like in the midst of those 2 years, at least, if not more, do you think you were kind of slowly becoming aware that this is a problem? Or, cause I know in the blog post, you talk about kind of waking up one morning and being like, how did I get here? So do you feel like it was kind of like this sudden realization of, oh crap, I might have a problem, or were there like lots of times throughout the 2 years where you would kind of speculate, is this problematic? Like,
yeah, I mean, I can remember back in 2014, like thinking, wow, I kind of drink a lot and trying to quit. You know, like I've always felt like I need to slow down and drink less. But telling yourself to do that doesn't mean it's possible. So yeah, there were starting to be some warning signs, and kind of how I knew things, were different. Like my relationship with alcohol had changed at that point. So I was waking up in the morning thinking about the drink that night. For most of the day. When I would go out to dinner with friends or family, it wasn't like I'm going to hang out with my friends and family. I was going to go get my wine at dinner. So I was really, alcohol is really taking control of my thoughts and my day. Some weird things really started happening that made me think like, wow, I think something's changing. I started to have more blackouts. So I don't know if you've ever had a blackout.
Where you just the next day, you're like, I don't just remember a chunk of the night. Remember that like conversation.
How did I get to bed? What did we talk about? What did I say? Like, I don't remember that at all. So that really started to happen more frequently. Like early on into like drinking in the night, I was blacking out sooner. I started to not be able to control how much I drink. So I would really have every best intention to have one or two drinks. But after that second drink, there was no more control at all. And I learned later it was my brain, like I had brain damage and from the alcohol, and that's, I couldn't, there's nothing that I was going to be able to do to control that. It's just how it was in my body at that point. And then I started really losing my balance a lot when I drink. So I kept like, I started falling over more, like hitting my head. I fell out of a car, sprained my ankle. I mean, these are like big things that, that kind of changed with alcohol. It was no longer just, I'm going to socially drink. Although everyone I knew still was.
Yes. Because that is a thing with our age range and our stage of life and having, like you were saying earlier, like having little kids, like I was just thinking the other day, and I actually, I mean, I'm sure this is the statement everyone says, but I honestly, I don't think I have a drinking problem personally. However, I will say, I was just thinking to myself the other day, like early on in our marriage, when me and Nason first got married, it would be like, if we went out to dinner for Mexican food, we might have a margarita. You know, or if we went out to dinner, we'd have a glass of wine or whatever, but it would, I don't think we ever actually had alcohol like in our home, like that we would buy, just have at our home for sure. Like, I mean, I'd say for the first 7 or 8 or 9 years of our marriage.
Wow.
But now, and again, I don't feel like we have a drinking problem, but now it would be very unusual if someone came over and we didn't have something to offer alcohol-wise. Like we always have some beer in the fridge, a bottle of wine, you know, some deep, like we have stuff here.
Oh yeah.
And it would also be very unusual to go out to dinner and not have, it's just like, when did it become, instead of like a special occasion, now it's just kind of like, well, of course,
it's just what we
we're going to have a drink. Of course, if someone wants a drink, of course we have stuff here. Mm-hmm. It's just so much more of a normal thing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, so you're right. Like, I do agree with you that it's kind of like, well, everyone is doing that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's what we do. You know?
Right. Yes.
And I very much felt like I should be able to do that like everybody else.
Right.
And I want to say too, like I pointed out all of those crazy things that was happening. I was, you know, blacking out and falling and all of those things. But if you would have seen me, you know, on the outside, I was fine.
Right.
I looked just like I do now. Like I didn't have the hair extensions. And
Did you not like in bed little... till noon each day
no.
and like disheveled looking? And
it wasn't like my friends are like, girl, you need to go to like AA or I mean, I wasn't hospitalized. Like it wasn't like you could look at me and know that I was struggling with alcohol. I mean, I was homeroom mom at my kid's school, volunteering, getting my work done at home, taking care of my family, you know? And so it was very much, it was kind of this, and you asked me like, where did you kind of classify yourself? And I've learned more terminology now on this side of it, but I was in this gray area.
Yeah.
Is what they consider that. And this gray area of drinking where it didn't look like I needed help, but I did.
Right.
Like I really had a drinking problem, but I wasn't, you know, your typical.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So you were saying like on the outside, most people or maybe no one would have noticed or thought you had a drinking problem.
Right.
But do you feel like those that aren't on the outside that actually were living in your house, like your husband or your children, who I'm sure were too young to have been able to articulate mom has a drinking problem, but do you think that they, in their own little way, were aware that there was a problem, or was your husband aware?
I don't think my kids were aware. You know, my husband was my drinking buddy. And so he got the worst. He saw the worst, you know, of these things. And, but even then, like men process alcohol differently than women. And so he wasn't having the same things I was.
Right.
He can drink
the
no
same
big
amount.
Deal.
And
he could stop himself. He could remember going to bed. He wasn't falling over, you know, like, and when I would try to explain, no, this, it's kind of different for me, you know, he really didn't quite get it.
Right.
And so, no one really knew except for me, like on the inside, on the inside, it was a completely different story. I mean, I was like, I was living a nightmare, honestly.
Yeah.
And that's what's so hard for people to get.
Right.
You know, 'cause you're not in my head, you know? But yeah, no, I was suffering with a ton of anxiety, a ton of shame. You know, what kind of mom drinks as much? What am I doing? I need to take
What did
better.
I possibly say or do last
yes.
night?
It was like totally embarrassed. Just, you know, beat myself up all the time, hated myself for my choices, wanted to do better. My relationship with my husband was definitely struggling, you know, because, I wasn't showing up as my best self.
Right.
So all of these things were kind of crumbling. And I felt very alone. Like I felt like I was the only mom that had this problem. So
I have a feeling that you're not, for the record.
I learned that I wasn't.
Yeah.
I learned that it, you know, it wasn't my fault as far as this is what alcohol does. And I learned all these things after the fact.
Right.
But that's why I am sharing my story and that's why I'm here, because I never want another mom to feel alone like that. Like I did and that, you know, that you're the only mom going through this.
Right.
Or struggling with alcohol.
Yeah.
Because I found out after the fact there are so many moms struggling. I was blown away, really. And that's why I want to continue to share my stories to hopefully help them.
Well, yeah. And far better to... I mean, I'm sure anyone that is out there that's struggling, there is probably some certain degree of embarrassment or shame or guilt or whatever.
So much, yeah.
But far better to just own it and say this is happening so that you can get help, get out of it, than to just, you know, because of the guilt and the shame, never deal with it and address it. And then it just spirals into something even worse.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, and I'm totally deviating from what
Sorry,
I have. No, it's not your fault. I just, it's really interesting. And so I had these questions written down beforehand, but now I'm like, oh wait, I'd rather ask this. Do you feel like in general, are you kind of an extreme person? Like, are you prone to, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it all in, whether it's good things or like with alcohol, like you're, is that kind of typical of you? Cause some people, like my husband is this way, honestly, he is like all or nothing. So that means with good things, he's all in, he's going to do the job all the way. Right. He's going to do it above and beyond, you know? But he can also outdrink most people like, because he's not going to just go have like, he's not going to go sip a beer for 3 hours. He's going to go all, you know what I mean? And so do you feel like you're kind of an extreme person?
I guess like,
that?
I've never thought about it that way, but I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really go all in with everything.
Right. Which is, and a lot of things good, I'm sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess I am. I guess I am kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you have people in your life, because you were saying with yours, you were kind of in this gray area. Like some people, it's like obvious. It's obvious. You need to stop drinking. Right. Like this is not good. But I can imagine, and maybe I'm wrong, but I would bet if you're kind of in that gray area, and if you've got other people in your circle that are kind of drinking the same amount or doing the same thing, did you find that you had people in your life that were like, oh, you don't, like, you're good. Like, you're over exaggerating the situation. Like, you're fine.
Every time I tried, you know, when I would reach out or maybe talk to a friend or like, wow, like I, especially if I'd had a night of binge drinking where I couldn't remember what I said, you know, I would text my friends, you know, the next day, oh, I'm so sorry I acted that way. And I mean, I just like totally beat myself up. And it was always like, what? Like, no big deal. We just had
you
so much
fine.
Fun.
Or,
so like, you're fine. Like, so yeah, it was just, I felt like, well, why do I care so much? Nobody else needs to care.
Right.
And I even talked to my doctor, like my nurse practitioner, and told her, you know, I'm having all this anxiety and I feel like I drink a lot. And she was like, well, what the nurses here do is, you know, we take activated charcoal the next day and we don't have a hangover. And
what?
You know, here's some anxiety medication. What? And I'm like,
and it's like, this is kind of like my cry for help in a way.
I know, it's not on anybody else but me. But I just kept thinking like, well, maybe this isn't a big deal.
Right.
Maybe I'm fine, you know? And it's just that constant, like that constant arguing and back and forth. And I learned that there's actually a name for that, but it creates this, cognitive dissonance in your head.
Okay.
That constant arguing back and forth. Like you keep doing something, you know, you shouldn't be doing it and you're doing it anyway and you're beating yourself up. Well, that cognitive dissonance can cause stress. Mm-hmm. Anxiety, you know, and I had those things. I mean, my anxiety was at an all time high. I was a walking panic attack. I was having panic attacks.
Because of the drinking, you think, or you were, and then just using the drinking to cope with the panic attack?
Because I was doing something I knew I shouldn't be doing.
Right. So the thing that you were talking about, basically, the tension of knowing what you should be doing and not doing it anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so you kind of had all of this going on, and then you talk about on your blog post how there was a particular morning where I guess maybe all of your kids were already at school, you're home alone or whatever, and you have on, I don't know if you even said what show, but I'm guessing like the Today Show or Good Morning America. You said like a morning show.
Yeah.
And there was a woman on there, and I think you just kind of overheard her say a quote, and I have it written down. I have it written down here somewhere. Well, I don't know where, but basically this woman talks about how, okay, here it is. A voice on TV caught my attention. I looked up at the TV and there was a mom talking on a morning show, and she was saying something like this: I'm there for my kids now like I never knew I could be. I'm living the most amazing life, and all because I gave up alcohol. So you kind of overheard this woman say that, caught your attention. Mm-hmm. And what kind of happened for you from that moment?
So I want to rewind before that moment just a minute, because I think it's important. I had been struggling for a long time. We got that part. And so at one point I remember I didn't know what else to do. And I remember I was so hungover. I was going to bed one night and, my husband had already fallen asleep, and I was so hungover. Like I really thought that I might die. Like I thought like my heart was racing. I was just twitching. Like I couldn't go to sleep. I was crying. And at that moment I just started praying. And, I kind of like you know, you're told to just surrender everything to God. And that's what I did. I mean, I was like, I can't do this without you. I mm-hmm. can't do this anymore. I don't want to die. I mean, it was one of those moments I'll never forget. And, just kind of surrendering everything. And, I think after that is when things kind of started to change slowly. But after that is when I saw that show.
Okay.
I don't know. Remember the exact timeline. I don't think it was the next day. It could have been, but
shortly thereafter.
Shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so yeah, I was in my kitchen, and I never have the Today Show on. Like, I don't listen to daytime TV. But it was January, and so they were talking about New Year's resolutions, mm-hmm. and I overheard Annie Grace talking about how she had been there for her kids now, like she never knew she could, and they were just radiating. And I remember like, yes, like that's what I want. And she said, well, I just wrote a book and it's called This Naked Mind. And I went on my Kindle. I ordered it like that day mm-hmm. and read the whole thing.
Because and, was not to stop you, but just really yeah. quick, because was her journey or her story similar yes. to yours? She had a drinking problem. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So she was a working mom, actually, very high up in the corporate world. And she was drinking about as much as I had been and struggling. And she finally was able to stop drinking, and she wrote this book. And the book, what it did was it helped me realize some important things. But one, it taught me how alcohol affects your body, mm-hmm. which I never actually knew the scientific part of it.
Right.
Which explained the blackouts and the falling over and the not being able to stop and all of those things. She talked about how addicting alcohol is and just kind of really made me feel like, okay, if she can do it, I could do it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a big turning point for me. I wish I could say I stopped drinking after that, but it wasn't that easy.
Okay. So that was a question I had, and I actually kind of thought it was. I kind of thought yeah. that you kind of heard this woman speaking mm-hmm. and then that day that mm-hmm. was it, but no,
I tried. Okay. I tried on my own again. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like February or early March where I had failed again miserably
okay.
to try on my own to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And I got back in the position where the same position I'd always been in. And I thought, I've got to get help. I can't do this on my own, like just with me. And so I made a therapy appointment.
Okay.
And go ahead.
So, well, I'm sorry. My mind is just going a mile a minute.
Yeah,
I wish that you could be, again, my biggest struggle is trying to condense things. I wish you could be here 3 hours for all the things I want to ask
come
you.
Back.
Maybe you should come back. But I was going to just ask you, because you were saying that you were struggling. You're trying to right. do it on your own, but you're yeah. struggling. And I know you're about to get into the part where you went to therapy.
Right.
But during the struggle, mm-hmm. was it like, were you more of like a... So like, was it a struggle for you mostly when you're trying to socialize and you're like, okay, this isn't as fun because I'm not drinking. And so mm-hmm. like being with people or party situations or social situations is what would make it difficult? Or were you struggling even just like, it's not like I'm at a party, I'm just at home and I'm desperately wanting a drink. Was it both?
It was both.
Okay.
I mean, just at home, because mm-hmm. it was a habit of mine I had for over a decade.
Right.
I would come home and drink at night,
mm-hmm.
you know, and hang out.
Yeah.
And talk and enjoy my, that was the best part of my day.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, I was struggling even in that situation.
Okay.
And then also very much struggling in social situations. I had gone to a big birthday party downtown mm-hmm. and, you know, I mean, what do you do?
Probably told yourself, I would bet on the way there, like, I'm not going to drink tonight.
I'm not going to, well, I said, I'm not going to drink that
drink.
Much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is always a slippery slope.
Right.
And really, even for someone that doesn't have a, you know, a quote unquote problem.
Uh-huh.
If you don't, I think with anything, not just even with drinking, but if you don't like very specifically, if you just kind of leave it up to like, mm-hmm. I'm going to eat like kind of healthy or I'm,
oh yeah.
Then you're just setting yourself up
no
for
plan.
Failure. Like
I
you have
no
to have,
plan.
I'm going to drink one drink or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, not even just with drinking. But I think anytime you're not specific with what your boundary is, you're probably not going
right.
to stick to your boundary.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So then you decide, I cannot do this on my own. Mm-hmm. This is not working. It's been like what, 3 or 4 months at this
yeah.
point, if you're trying on your own. So then you decide to go get help.
Yeah. So I went to therapy and I remember my first therapy appointment. It was like the first part of March. And I showed up to that therapy appointment completely hungover. I mean, I was like a walking panic attack. Like this lady must have thought like I was tweaked out on like
something
drugs or I don't know. Like I was sitting there like super anxious, like twitching, like couldn't be still. And I lied. I did not tell her I had a problem with alcohol.
Okay. She just felt you there for like anxiety.
I was like, I have a problem. Yeah. Okay. I have an anxiety problem. I don't know what's going on in my life. I need you to fix it. And, I left that appointment and I was sitting in my car and I'm like, enough is enough. Like I was humiliated, like how I acted in the appointment and like mm-hmm. to this stranger, you know, and,
cause you're just acting like jittery and like yes. all over the place.
Like I could see it on her face. Yes. Yeah. She wasn't good at hiding it. Right. She's like, what is this? You know, what is happening?
Right.
So I made a promise to myself that day that, and I had planned to see her the very next week that, by the time I saw her that next week, I was going to be a week sober. And I made it through that week
and
without drinking. It was so hard. Yeah. But I didn't want to walk into her office like that again.
Right.
And I did it. And when I walked into that office the next week, I told her everything. I mean, it was the first time in my life I was really honest with someone about how much I was drinking, how much I was suffering. Mm-hmm. I held nothing back and really shocked her. But by being honest and by having a good cry with her, and she was able to help me.
Was that a relief to finally yeah. kind of tell someone? Had you even expressed to your husband at this point? Like, no. So she was literally the first person.
And when I talked to her, and this is crazy, but when I talked to her that day, it wasn't like I was asking, I said, I need help drinking less. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to quit.
Right.
And she said, no, you need to stop drinking for good. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I just really need to learn how to handle my alcohol better.
How to moderate.
Yeah. And she said, no. And I said, everybody drinks, you know, I have to drink. And she said, not everybody drinks. Mm-hmm. And she said, I don't drink. And she said, most people I know don't drink. And she said, you don't have to drink at all. And we laugh about it now, but I was like, what?
You're like, what do you mean? Because you said you come from a family drinks and it was shocking.
And I'm like, well, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. You know? And she was the first person that had ever told me that. Mm-hmm. And so, after that, I'm like, I cannot drink at all, you know, and it just started this path that I've been on for a little over a year now.
So. Did you find that, so after you leave her, I'm sure not too long after that, you tell your husband kind of what she has told you or what you want to do, and possibly your family or close friends.
Yeah.
Did you feel like people, maybe even specifically your husband, since mm-hmm. he was kind of your drinking buddy, were people kind of mm-hmm. disappointed? Like, what do you mean? Like, we can't drink together anymore. Or, am I not supposed to drink in front of you
right.
now? Was it kind of almost like a disappointment to some mm-hmm. people?
For sure.
Including your husband?
No, he was okay with it. Mm-hmm. He was like, you do it. Like, he was ready too. Mm-hmm. And ready for a change. You know, a lot of my close family and friends didn't really understand because remember, it never looked like I had a problem.
Right.
So I just showed up to the, you know, family camp out now and I'm like, mm-hmm. well, I'm not drinking anymore. And they're like, well, that's what we do. We're all going to stay up and drink.
You right.
know, like, what do you mean we're not going to drink? And so, yeah, it was really kind of surprising, I think, and just a little awkward. Mm-hmm. But I really... I just had no choice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it. I totally can see that. Do you feel like, is socializing a whole different, is it less fun for you now to go to a party or to go camping with your family or, you know, whatever events mm-hmm. that you get invited to? Do you feel like the fun has been dampened or do you enjoy yourself more because you're not having to walk around right. with this guilt and shame and fear of like, what am I going to say? You know?
Yeah. I think it's a big mix of both. Mm-hmm. So when I first stopped drinking, it was good. Like I had my new high was being sober.
Right.
You know, I had this like
the new kick or the new thing that you're on. Like the new thing you're all in with.
Like I was in a honeymoon phase. Like I just felt great. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm going to enjoy life. And like the grass was green and I was vibrant and had joy in my life again. And it was so easy kind of just to be like, no, I'm not going to drink. So I was still having fun. But it does change every single thing that you do because now you're doing it without drinking.
Right.
So yeah, it didn't really take the fun, but it does make it hard because you want to just kind of fit in and do what you've always done. But then, you know, you have to get through and you really like when I show up to a social situation, I have to get through kind of the first 30 minutes of, saying no, like that first 30 minutes when everyone gets a drink and, you know, after that, it kind of, no one really cares or notices that I'm not drinking.
Right.
And then,
cause they're like all drunk at that point.
Right. And then what the best part is the next day.
Right.
Cause I feel great.
Yes. And they're suffering.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I think everyone drinking problem or not, everyone that drinks, I think wakes up the next day and maybe they're not hungover.
Right.
But you don't feel great. No, even if you just had a glass or two of wine. And I know for me, there's been times where I'm like, what is the point? Like what? Like,
I know.
I feel, you know, either groggy or like bloated or, you know, I have a real sensitivity. I get headaches very easy from even one drink a lot of times. And so sometimes I'm like, was one drink. Was it even really that awesome to be worth this headache that I have?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So my next question kind of going off of that is what was some like, obviously I'm sure you've seen like monumental positive changes the longer you've done this, but what were some just like almost immediate, just really small positive things that you saw like right off the bat as a result of the not drinking?
Yeah. So right off the bat, like I mentioned, I went through this like honeymoon phase, like where, I mean, I had been drinking for so long that, I didn't know life not drinking. And so, like the grass was greener and the colors were more vibrant. I mean, just this whole kind of world, that I hadn't known or been a part of, appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And, it really felt like, wow, this is what living is like, you know, and, so that was super positive. And then, like I remember when I first started drinking, I slept a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I was so tired.
Yeah. When you first stopped,
stopped drinking. Okay. When I first started not drinking.
Right.
when I first stopped drinking, I was so, so tired. And so I ended up sleeping a lot and I love sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like sober sleep is the best.
I was going to say, because maybe the quality of your sleep had been poor for so long because of the drinking that you're finally actually getting like good sleep for the first time. Yeah.
And I realized I love to sleep and I realized I love going to bed at like 8:30.
Right.
I realized I love getting up in the morning early, you know, like all of these things that weren't possible. I realized I really love good food. You know, how much better food tasted.
Like healthy food, you're saying?
No, or
just,
any
you just
food.
Enjoy food in
because
general.
Because when you go out to eat and you're drinking, I wasn't really like enjoying the food.
Right.
I was enjoying the wine.
You're just in it for the wine or the margarita or whatever.
So there are some big things that changed pretty quickly, right? Those are the things right off the bat, just being sober.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we just ever so slightly switch gears, not like to totally new topic, but a little bit of a change. Will you repeat the name of the book and the author that was on the show that kind of jump started some of this for you in case anyone else was interested in reading it?
The book is called This Naked Mind.
Okay.
And it's by Anna Grace.
Okay. And we'll write that down too and post it. But just in case anyone was listening and thought, hey, I should probably read that book too.
Yeah.
Okay, so you kind of embarked upon this new journey of sobriety, and it sounds like you keep saying you're kind of in this like honeymoon phase, and it seems, and obviously, I mean, I haven't known you that long, but it seems from what I've read on your blog and talking to you a little bit that kind of almost led to this whole new, like not just getting healthy as far as the drinking, but you were now kind of on this whole new path, like, I got healthy in this area, like what else do I need? How else do I need to get healthy? And what else have I not been doing that I need to be doing? Just kind of this whole new outlook on life. And so on this blog post that I keep referring to, you kind of talk about, or not kind of, you do talk about the biggest changes that you made that year. 2018 was kind of your year of just change in general. And in 2018, you made, I think there's 10 of them here, changes that you felt like just changed the whole trajectory of your life. And I'm going to read them out loud to people listening. And I actually, for each of the 10, had like questions for you.
Sure.
But I'm not sure if time is going to allow us for me to ask a question per thing, but I'm going to read them and I have some questions okay. for you. So the 10 biggest changes that you made that year to change the trajectory of your life. Number one, you said self-love is key. You have to love yourself before you can love anyone else. And so what do you do regularly now in the name mm-hmm. of self-care? Like, what is a thing that's like your main thing and your main yeah. way of taking care of yourself or loving yourself well?
So forever, and I think this is kind of what moms do, but we take care of everybody. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't taken care of myself at all. And so now what I do is before I wake up in the morning and before I think about what I need to do for my kids or for my husband or for work or for the house or for whatever, my grandmother, whoever, I think about what I need to do for me. And I've instilled that into every day. What are my self-care things and what do I need to do? And am I doing those and am I fitting those in? And so that's just become more of a priority. So I can feel my best. And when I feel my best, I can pour out to everyone else so much better.
Mm-hmm. Well, your second one was no coping with mm-hmm. alcohol, food, shopping, staying busy, et cetera. Right. And so that actually is a question that I had meant to ask you is, did yeah. you find that once you gave up alcohol, that you kind of maybe had some other thing that kind of became the new alcohol?
Yeah. Yeah. So what I realized with alcohol, like I was able to tackle alcohol, right? For the first like 4 or 5 months, that was my biggest challenge. But what I realized was alcohol use was the symptom mm-hmm. of the big problem.
Right.
it was a coping mechanism I was using to cope with my life and mm-hmm. to cope with emotions. And so, with the help of my therapist, I really had to dive in and figure out why I was drinking in the first place, what I was trying to cope with. And I had to dig into my past mm-hmm. and trauma and, learn self-love and learn a sense of self and learn to not people please. And, you know, all of these things, that I was doing, so yeah, alcohol is definitely a coping mechanism. And then I learned I had other ones like perfectionism and, I even work too hard, you know, workaholism mm-hmm. and I'm go all in, like you said. Yeah. yeah. So, I was coping with a lot of things.
Did some of those things become worse once the drinking stopped? Like, did you start, you know, like you mentioned food and shopping mm-hmm. and staying busy and perfectionism, did mm-hmm. those almost start to peak because the alcohol was gone? And so now you're mm-hmm. okay. And so, I mean, you're just having to work through all of that in therapy.
Yeah. So they did peak, but I was able to recognize it.
Right.
Immediately.
Quicker maybe than what you
and even this a couple months ago, I realized I had switched to workaholism. Mm-hmm. I was working way too much. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, I did it again. But I know better
right.
now. I know
what aware.
To look for. Yeah.
So just side note really quick, are you still in therapy or was mm-hmm. okay, so you are like a believer in just kind of ongoing weekly therapy?
I tried to quit.
Yeah.
So I went weekly for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then I switched to every other week.
Okay.
And then I switched to once a month.
Okay.
And so this past March at kind of my year date, I thought I was in such a great place. I didn't have to go back mm-hmm. and we hugged and said bye. And then I called her in April and was like, I'm coming.
I need you
and still. I'm going back this week. So okay. I might always go once a month, but it's so helpful.
I was gonna say that seems healthy.
It
just
is
like a little
it's
like
my self-care.
Tweaking, getting you back.
Yeah.
That's a great way. Okay. So you had self-love is key, no coping with alcohol, food, other things. Your third kind of realization or change was to live for your future self. So think mm-hmm. about where you want to be in 3 to 5 years and what is the best version of you look like, and then kind of planning your time and your
right.
priorities and everything around that. Your fourth item was that your children will be who you are. And so you kind of talked in that about just your kids kind of watching how you're
yeah.
doing life and learning
yeah.
from that. Do you feel like you have seen some really positive changes come out of your children because of the positive changes in you?
Oh, for sure.
Like
yeah.
what?
And, you know, my kids are a little older. You know, Alex is 12 now. Mm-hmm. And he's already asking me a lot of questions about alcohol. you know, and there's kids bringing alcohol to school in middle school. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a thing. And, you know, do I want him to see mommy stressed out and so she's drinking? Or do I want him to see mommy handling her stress in a healthy way? Mm-hmm. Do I want my daughter to love herself and have self-love? Or do I want to see her, you know, beat herself up?
Right.
And, you know, I had to ask myself all these questions. Well, if I want my kids to do this, then I need to do it. Mm-hmm. And when I kind of switched focus and started taking care of my body and exercising and loving myself and all of these things, I saw my kids start to kind of do it too. Mm-hmm. I started waking up early, an hour early, so I could try to get in a workout and journal and set my intention for the day and practice gratitude. And my my daughter started doing it too. You know, things like that.
That's awesome.
You know? So
that's really good. I like that. Your next one that you said is unpack your baggage.
Yeah.
So what you meant kind of by that is just like, because you said your alcoholism was a result of things that you had not coped with or dealt with. Do you think that you were like in the midst of your drinking, mm-hmm. do you think you realized that you were doing that because of not having dealt with stuff? You had no idea. Mm-mm. So in hindsight and in therapy is when you came to realize that that's what you were doing.
Right. Right.
So once you realize that and you kind of call it an anchor, like you say, you can't move forward without getting rid of the anchors that you're dragging with you.
Right.
So for someone out there that's listening that knows that they have an anchor that needs to be dealt with.
Right.
What is your recommendation to them or kind of what did your process look like of getting rid of it? Therapy.
It was therapy and really I had to muster up a whole lot of courage and, be willing to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. My therapist was like, you do not like to be uncomfortable. And she's so right. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like to sweat, you know, or I don't like to have uncomfortable conversations.
Right.
I'm a peacekeeper. I'm a people pleaser. So I want everything to be nice. And to really dig into my past, I had to be willing to be uncomfortable for a little while mm-hmm. and to really feel that emotion that my body was trying to tell me, you know, this is what your emotions are trying to tell you something's wrong. If you're stressed, you know, you need to listen to your body. If you're right. angry, like you have to really sit in that anger. And I've learned to do that now, to sit in that stress for like an hour or so or a day or sit uncomfortable for a couple of days to really figure out what's happening. You know, mm-hmm. So I've had to learn to do that, to feel those emotions, you know, alcohol numbs your emotions.
Right.
So I was never feeling them.
Yeah.
I was stuffing them.
I think that's really good because I think probably most, I just like most things that people, whether it's alcoholism or mm-hmm. I don't know, having an affair or like mm-hmm. most scraps that people find themselves in, I think probably are, there's always a main thing that someone is not dealing with.
Right.
And I also think probably similar to you, most people don't want to have to deal with the discomfort or the inconvenience or the time or whatever to deal with whatever that thing is. I mean, I know for sure mm-hmm. I do that. I don't know if you read much or care much about like the Enneagram, if you're like an Enneagram girl, like I am, but I'm like a 9 mm-hmm. on the Enneagram, which is a peacemaker. I don't know.
Okay.
You mentioned you're kind of that way.
Yeah.
But I know for me, all I want is just for everything to feel very peaceful on the inside.
Yeah.
And so if that means pretending like a problem doesn't exist, uh-huh. then that's what I will do. Or if it means maybe I will at least acknowledge the problem exists, but I don't want to like go too far down that path. So I'm just going to kind of go this way instead.
Right.
Anything to just kind of keep that inner peace. But I think that ultimately that ends up resulting in not peace, in turmoil versus just dealing, like you were just saying, even though it's uncomfortable or hard or you know, burdensome in the moment, just dealing with it will probably save you so much pain and heartache and stress later on down the road.
Yeah, it will. And with alcohol, especially like if you're stressed drinking, mm-hmm. your stress isn't going away.
Right. You're creating new stresses.
You're just like, putting a Band-Aid on it for that day and it's still going to be there the next day. Mm-hmm. And it's going to compound because you're stuffing it and it's going to come out eventually. Might as well
just deal with it. Well, not even to mention it might be creating other problems
on top of whatever
you did the night before or said, you're probably creating
it makes it worse.
Friendship problems or, you know, whatever. Okay, so self-love is key. Not coping with alcohol. Live for your future self. Remembering that your children will be who you are. Unpack your baggage. So kind of that concept of getting rid of the anchor that you're dragging around with you. Your sixth one was don't make yourself small. You said that you realized for a long time that you were kind of putting a thumb on your dreams and goals because you were kind of worried like maybe they're too big or it's too unrealistic. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Okay. I think you came to find that that's not the case. Right. Your dreams are not too big.
Right.
So we will come back to that one. Your seventh one was have the hard conversations. Mm-hmm. And I really like that one because I think I am an avoider of hard conversations.
Yeah, I am too.
I avoid them at all costs.
Me too.
Or if I do muster up the nerve to have the hard conversation, I often find myself kind of like, okay, I'll have it, but I'm going to kind of sugarcoat it or not really like dive into what needs to be said, but just, and so do you feel like you have grown a lot in that area?
Yeah, I realized the hard conversations that I wanted to have, I kept having them hypothetically in my head. But once I had them, they weren't that hard. You know, it, like I was making them hard, but they weren't.
Right.
after the fact, you know, so a lot of things that I wasn't willing to come out and talk about or say, once I did them, I was like, oh, like I was just really making this harder than it needed to be. And it really opened up a lot of opportunity in my life to be who I want to be and to be myself by being able to have those hard conversations that I needed to have for me.
Do you find yourself almost now, because I know for me on the rare occasion that I do muster up the nerve to have a hard conversation afterwards, I feel very kind of like empowered. So do you find that the more that you do it, the more you almost kind of welcome hard conversations?
I don't know if I welcome them, but I'm not scared of them. If I come up to an issue, like I need to have a conversation, it's still hard. You know, they're never easy, but yeah, you do feel better once they're done and it does give you strength to do it again. It's like you're kind of building this, and that's what all of these things are. These 10 things you're reading, you're building a good foundation,
right?
To keep getting better and stronger and try harder things.
So if you were going to give advice to those of us out there who just shy away from hard conversations, kind of like a little nugget of wisdom, would you maybe just say like, just have the conversation, like once you just decide
I would
to do
say,
it. Just...
Definitely don't have it when you're drinking.
Right. That's good. That's a good.
No, I mean, a lot of people are like, I need to have some wine before I can have this conversation.
Right. Yeah.
But I've found that conversations I've had while drinking don't really count. Because you really have to have them again,
right?
When you can really connect more. So don't drink first and then just kind of go for it. And, I also think it's good to come from a place of respect to the person you're talking to. So if you know they might react in a certain way, maybe kind of start with that. Like, hey, this might, I know I want to talk to you about something, but I know you very well and I love you so much. And this might stress you out because of this. So I'm going to put this out there first, but just kind of hear what I have to say, you know, so
kind
really have
prepping them a little bit.
Yeah. Prep them and then just come from a place of, you know, compassion.
Okay. Your next one was don't be scared to be a leader and a change instigator. And then you kind of talk in this one about, and I can totally see this because again, like that is just what our age group and our kind of social circle is doing. People are drinking. And so when you're the one person or one of the few that's not, and that's what you talk about kind of in this point, it's just how that was almost like this odd thing. Like you're now standing out because you're like the girl that doesn't drink. But what you go on to say is that you felt like you inspired people and inspired your family. And we didn't talk about this before, but I want to circle back to it now. How did it change your husband when you decided to stop drinking? What came as a result of that?
So I never, and you can't do this. Like I never went to the place where, you know, we're going to stop drinking and you have to stop too. You know, the only person you can change is you.
Right.
Right. That's the only thing you have control of. So I never took that approach. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I didn't know if he'd stop drinking or, if it would upset him, but I didn't want to die. And, you know, and for me, I had to kind of push myself forward and do it. And so, I just kind of did what I was going to do and I made those changes and kind of stepped out as the leader in that. And I'm so grateful to God for this, but he followed in my footsteps and on his own.
Almost immediately, or was it more of a longer road trip?
Yeah, he stopped drinking with me at home. And when I was doing yoga, instead of drinking at night, he would do some yoga with me, mm-hmm. and we'd go to bed, you know? And it was just so nice. And then when I started like getting up early and trying to work out and like push myself, now he gets up early mm-hmm. and works out and is chasing some goals, you know? So it really like, he was always a few months behind me. Like he saw me, I mean, he saw me hopping out of bed with my soul on fire, like this whole new, like happy, you know, motivated person. And he's like, I want some of that, mm-hmm. you know? And I know a lot of people will kind of be like, well, although that person needs to change or that person needs to change, but really, you know, whoever that person is, not even your spouse, but a friend or a family member. And really the best way to get them to change is to change yourself.
Right.
Is to start with you.
Mm-hmm. What if he hadn't made the decision to stop drinking? Would that have made you angry, or would it make life much more difficult?
He still drinks, you know, socially. Mm-hmm. And, but we don't like sit up and drink together.
Right.
So if he would have like kept going, I mean, I don't know what would have happened, but, I knew he'd come along.
Yeah.
We're best friends.
That's good. He seems like a good husband.
He is the best.
Your ninth item was add things in instead of taking things out. And you talk in this one about how you like the yoga. You now do yoga at night. Instead of drinking a bottle of wine followed by whiskey, you're now doing yoga. And then just new habits. I love you wrote here. And I kind of do this too, honestly. But you might be a little more kind of regimented with it. But you talk about how every morning, well, first of all, you're starting your day an hour earlier now because you're not probably hungover and sick and sleepy.
Yeah.
But you get up an hour earlier and you write down your whole day, including the little things like wash my hair, drink water, do the laundry, like all the things. And you talk about how you write those down until eventually they become
a habit,
a new habit. Yeah. And I really like that.
Yeah.
I think that's good advice for people to start implementing. Did you see that those things started to become habits fairly quickly, or is it still for you kind of like this, okay, these aren't habits yet, so I have to still keep reminding myself of all these things.
Well, when I first started, when I wrote that post in January, I had to write everything down. I was creating a whole new life. Mm-hmm. So I had to write down, wash my hair and do these things. And I'm going to do yoga today. I'm going to make sure I drink water today. But those things did become habits fairly quickly. And now I've been able to add on to those. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk about adding things in one at a time, now drinking water is just something I do.
Right.
It's become who I am. Mm-hmm. Now getting up early is just something I do. So those things did become habit over like a month or so of doing them.
Okay. That was going to be a question.
Yeah. About 30 days.
About 30 days. Because sometimes I think people feel like it's too daunting. Like that's going to take forever to become ingrained or become a habit. But like 30 days, like I think if you had the reassurance, okay, in 30 days, this is going to start to feel
normal,
just like part of my day, then that doesn't seem quite as overwhelming to people. Maybe they're contemplating starting new
habits. I think if you're trying to give up something, it can seem like, oh, I don't want to give up Coke or Diet Coke or whatever. It can seem kind of disappointing, but when you're adding stuff in, like when I added in more water, I was drinking so much water, I couldn't drink anything else.
Right.
You know,
there's
so that
time
I couldn't drink so much coffee. So the other stuff just kind of goes away on its own without having to feel like I'm depriving myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Your 10th item, and this will be a perfect segue into the next thing I want to ask you about, but your 10th item on this list is that believe you really can do it all.
Yeah.
And so you, after kind of having, you stopped drinking, you started this whole new kind of way of doing life and creating new habits and being a healthier person, like on the inside and physically and all of that, which then led you to be able to do something you've always wanted to do, but probably could not have done in the peak of your struggle with alcohol. What is that thing? Why are you a big deal? Tell us. You're the biggest deal I've had here so far.
No, I'm not a big deal. I loved writing, and I had started blogging back in 2015 as a book blogger, and I love books and I love reading. And I started writing a book, I guess in 2016. It took me 2 years to write it because I was writing it while I was drinking a lot. But I really wanted to publish that book, and I ended up publishing it last September. So I published it myself.
Okay.
So I'm an indie author is what that is called. But I had a story I wanted to tell, and, you know, to publish a book yourself and to put your story out there takes a lot of courage and kind of self-confidence. And, you know, I didn't really have that when I was drinking so much.
Right. So you would write, but you would never have had the confidence and the courage and kind of like oomph to do something with
it. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I want to clarify too, you haven't asked me this, but I just want to be completely honest with everyone that I have drank since I quit drinking.
Yes. I was actually asking.
Okay.
That. No, but go ahead. Tell.
Well, right, I just feel like I'm not being, truthful.
Right.
Yeah. After I was sober, like for like 4 or 5 months, completely sober, then I tried to start moderating again. And by moderating, I mean like maybe have a glass of wine or two on a birthday dinner or on a vacation or something like that. So that's where I'm at today. I can now stop myself after a couple drinks. However, it's hard and it's scary, and moderating is exhausting. Mm-hmm. And, every time I decide I'm going to drink, it's like, well, what am I going to drink and what's going to happen? And what if I drink too much? And, it's so exhausting. It's more easy just to not do it at all.
And so that leads me to, and I'm not judging you at all but I think that leads me to a question that I'm just curious about.
Yeah.
Why don't you just decide not to drink if it is hard? And I don't think there's anything wrong with what you're doing as far as drinking at a birthday or on a trip.
Yeah.
I certainly do. But if you are saying and admitting that is actually harder and brings more like, what's going to happen? Why don't you just completely stop?
Because it's hard.
Yeah.
Just to not drink.
Right.
This is, I didn't get to where I was in a year. That took, you know, a decade of being that person. And so I try to give myself a lot of grace. And like, I know that this is a really hard journey that I'm on, that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna slip up and I'm gonna give in. And so I try to give myself grace and think, you know, this has only been a little over a year. Yeah. And, I want to get, you know, I write down my goals every morning. One of my goals I've been writing down for like 5 months was to be on a podcast. So
there you go. We can cross it off.
I know. But another one I write down every morning is that I'm sober completely. Mm-hmm. And I want to get there, and I will. I know I will. I'm close. I mean, after sitting here talking to you this whole time, I'm like, I'm done, you know. Mm-hmm. But it is really hard.
But that is a goal that you have, is to eventually reach a point where you're like, I'm never drinking again.
As far as a lifetime decision, when I picture my future self, she's sober and does not drink ever.
Right.
I don't think it's worth it.
But I do think the way, like, your mindset is good, because I have a friend who struggled with addiction. And I remember his, I don't know if it was in AA or maybe it was in counseling. I don't know. I don't want to get it wrong. But someone in his life, someone wise in his life, told him, like, just, you're sober today. Like, tell yourself, I'm going to be sober today.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that you won't ever make a decision to quit drinking forever. But to kind of look at forever seems very overwhelming.
It is overwhelming.
But to just say, I can decide today, like, I'm not drinking today. And so I think that your mindset and the way you're doing it is really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not drinking today. I know that.
Right. You're definitely drinking right now.
I'm not drinking wine right now. So
so that's good.
It's LaCroix.
Yes. I saw you bring your LaCroix cannon. Okay, we have to wrap up fairly soon, but I still have like several just really important things that we have to ask. And if my kid gets picked up late from preschool, then I guess just like, so be it. But you didn't say the name of your book for one thing, which is huge.
So the name of my book that I published is called Silent All These Years, and it is named after that Tori Amos song.
Okay.
I don't know if you know that song. I heard it playing in Academy one day. I'm like, that's the name of my book. But it's also very metaphorical because I was silent for all those years.
Right.
It was perfect.
Okay. This in itself could and would have to be a whole entire podcast episode, but really quickly, if you can, and maybe like a minute, tell us what is the book somewhat about and what is it based on? Because I believe it is based on somewhat of a real life event.
Right. So, my story started, my mother passed away when I was 3 years old, and her, death was, it was involved in an unsolved murder mystery that I won't go into too much detail because we don't have time, but I've always had this, this story in my heart. Like, I have a big imagination. So growing up with a mother that had passed away in that way, I made up stories all the time. Well, I bet it happened like this. And mm-hmm. I bet she got sick like that. And so I've always had this story on my heart. I didn't want to write her story as nonfiction, because there's a lot of people involved and it's still unsolved. And there's other people that died and that sort of thing. So what I did was I wanted the story to be more about my relationship with my mother and how it was to lose her. And at such a young age and how I'm affected by that now as an mm-hmm. adult. And so I wrote a mystery suspense thriller book. Okay. I mean, it's like a rated R like movie.
Okay.
And I included that as the plot line.
Okay.
Was kind of the mystery behind her death.
And it's so crazy to like almost wrap up because I'm sure, I mean, me again, yeah. you and I have really never talked before until today. So myself as well, as I'm sure people listening are like, what? This is like this crazy story. But I guess we just simply don't have time for that today. And you could even, I mean, there's like a million questions in my mind now, like what was it like growing up without a mom? And
yeah.
you will just for sure have to come back.
Okay, I will.
But if people want to buy your book, how mm-hmm. can they do that? Where can they find it?
So it's on Amazon.
Okay.
There's a paperback version and there's a Kindle version
okay.
on Amazon. And then you can also buy it on iBooks for your iPad or Nook from Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
So if you search, if you go to my website, pagesandlace.com, there's a link to my my author website, and you can go there and buy it as well.
Okay. And you and I had talked about, and we never quite solidified, but when I kind of type up the show notes from today,
yeah.
you and I had talked about possibly offering people mm-hmm. that are listening a free Kindle.
Yeah.
copy of your book. Okay. So we will talk after we wrap this up about how we want that to look. And when I yeah. kind of type up the summary of our show, I will give people instructions on how they can do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I would love to offer that.
And I would like to read it myself, actually.
Yeah, I meant to bring you one and I forgot. So
that's okay.
That's
I didn't have the right cord for our podcast today. So I'm much more in the doghouse than you. Okay. So but really quick, also, you're working on another book currently.
I'm working
correct?
On another book right now, and I want to publish it in the fall. And it's also another mystery suspense novel. I really like that's my
kind
genre.
Of your genre. Okay.
But I like to incorporate a real life thing. And my first novel, the main character suffered from debilitating anxiety, which mm-hmm. I've suffered with. And in this book, there's some alcoholism in there.
Okay.
And the main character is a mom.
Okay.
And I hope that by looking inside kind of her thoughts and her mind that people can get a better understanding of what it's like.
So there will definitely be kind of some touches of
yes.
real life and of you and of kind of
yes.
your personal story
but
with
it's
that,
a mystery.
Even though it's a mystery.
Yeah.
Mostly fiction.
A good story. Yeah.
Okay. If people want kind of like more of Tiffany, if they're very
yeah.
inspired by what you've said and mm-hmm. they want to kind of dig more or learn more, you just mentioned your blog. It's pagesandlace.com.
Yes.
Where else can they find you?
So, I spend all of my time now, you know, I've kind of catapulted myself into a personal growth mode.
Mm-hmm.
I read a book a week. I'm learning all kinds of things. So I write all of those out in blog posts almost every day and post them on my blog and also on my social media. So if you are interested in reading that stuff and kind of getting some encouragement and support for your day, you can find me mostly on Instagram. It's at Tiffany Massa and it's TiffanIMassa. And you can find that on my website as well at pagesandlace.com.
Okay.
And then I'm on Facebook at Pages and Lace. I have a Facebook page. So I'm posting
Perfect.
There pretty much every day.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Okay. So to quickly wrap up, this is the one I didn't do all my little like fun segments I always do because of our kind of
crunch
time.
I was ready for
time.
Those too.
I know. You're going to be back again.
Okay.
But I do at least want to do this because I do this with everybody. So I want you to tell us what you are reading right now. What is a book? You just said you're reading a book a week. So what book are you reading right now?
Right now, I just actually finished it. It's called Body Love by Kelly Levesque. And she talks about how to get rid of food drama in your life for good.
Food drama.
So
okay.
if you're someone that has food drama with dieting back and forth and
gotcha.
All the things, like she taught me how to eat. Hands down, I've done it for 2 weeks. I feel great.
Okay.
Yeah, I love this book.
This is intriguing.
Yeah.
What show are you watching right now? Do you have a show that you're just binge watching or
can
super
I,
into?
Can I say Game of Thrones?
Or? Of course. You can say whatever you want. There are no rules
Game
here.
Game of Thrones all the way.
Game of Thrones. Yeah. Okay. I think I'm the only person that does. And I have no reason for not. I actually think it looks really good. I just have never started watching it. So, okay. Is there a song that you're loving right now?
That was a hard one for me, but, so I'm really into movies. I watch all the movies. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all are movie people, but there's a song on, if you saw Spider-Verse.
My kids are obsessed with that movie. Yes.
I'm obsessed with that movie.
Yes.
Which is kind of funny, but there's a song on there by, it's called Sunflower.
Yes. We listen to that 30 times a day.
I was like jamming out. That's my jam. Yep. I was listening to that on the
way here. That's a good one. Okay. Last but not least, is there kind of an Austin specific thing that you're loving? It could be like a restaurant. It could be a park. It could be like you had great service somewhere and you're all kinds of pumped up about it.
You know, I don't really get out to Austin very much.
Oh yeah. You're like a Georgetown girl. Yeah, so, okay,
but I've been going to Georgetown a lot lately and I just went to this place, Hula Cowgirl.
I don't know this place.
Okay. It's called Hula Cowgirl.
Okay.
And it's on the map. But it has really insane desserts.
Okay.
And shaved ice, like the big cookies. The shaved ice is like bigger than your head. I mean, it's
okay. So your kids probably love that.
Yes. I didn't eat anything there, but it was, my kids loved it.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think that's it. Even though, again, there's a million more things I could ask you, but my kid's going to be the last one sitting on the curb waiting for me to pull up. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate talking to you, and I will be posting all the stuff we talked about so people can find you and follow you and read your articles and find your book and all of that. So that will be posted in the next couple of days. And so I guess that's it. Say goodbye to everyone.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It really was a big goal of mine. So I really appreciate this opportunity.
Good. I was telling you on the way here, you were kind of like nervous. And I was like, because you had said this has kind of been like a goal of yours.
It's
like writing is your thing and it's easy for you. And I'm kind of like that too. But like having to talk in person is like a whole new ballgame. And so you had this kind of goal to be on a podcast. And I said, look, this is a good one to start with because mine is not a big deal. We've got like broken equipment. We're like sitting in a hot closet. Like, this is a good place for you to have done your first podcast. And maybe you'll get contacted by like Jamie Ivey or Jen Hatmaker or someone cool now.
Dreams come true.
I'm glad I could be a baby step for you. But for real, thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. And we are signing off. So goodbye.